Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4. It is the Blitz. Mitch Widmeyer locked in here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he joins us every Monday, Mike Grimm, voice of the Gophers and sports director at Minnesota News Network. Mike, as always, the time's appreciated. We're going to get to the Gophers in a few minutes, but learned today of the passing of longtime voice of the Gophers, Ray Christensen, and I'm sure you knew him, interacted with him, and I'm sure you've got a couple of stories about him as well.
Yeah, you know, sad day certainly for Gopher fans, and a guy in my position certainly understands the importance of what Ray has meant to Gopher athletics. He was the voice of Minnesota athletics for half a century, 1951 and 2001, 50 years of the Golden Voice calling the Golden Gophers. I got to know him just a little bit back when I interned as a college student with WCCO Radio in Minneapolis back in 1992. I interned there. Ray, in addition to being the voice of the Gophers, was the midday news radio anchor there. And my internship was during the daytime hours. And so a very polite guy, went about his business great. I remember walking in one of my first handful of days on the job as an intern, and they would have this, obviously, the station playing over the speakers in the hallways and stuff, so everyone could hear what was going on. And I remember hearing the news and hearing Ray's voice, and not being that familiar, having grown up in Iowa, with his voice or really the work of CCO in great detail. I would listen to Twins games at night on occasion, but nothing during the day. And I remember the first time I heard the newscast back then, and I thought, why is CBS national news playing like now? We're not even to the top of the hour yet. And that's how good Ray's voice sounded, was that I thought, oh, well, this is a network national style newscast. This isn't, you know, some local newscaster. And as it turned out, of course, CCO and all of Minnesota, lucky enough to have a guy so good that, you know, the first time you hear him, you think it's a national network newscast, and it was a Minnesota newscast. And then I went and graduated from college, got other work, worked in Iowa for 9 years, St. Louis for six, and then moved here as the voice of the Gophers. Now, I didn't immediately take Ray's spot. Ray had been retired for just about 6 years. Dave Lee had been serving as the voice in the meantime, and Dave still continued to do football during my early years here, and then I was doing basketball. And through some things where we did, Ray did commercials for Washburn McCreevy Funeral Chapels here in town, and then did these vignettes where he would recall his memories. I would two, three, maybe four times a season drive to his condo or his townhouse in Rosemont where he lived, and take my recorder, and we would record these vignettes and these commercials. And to my amazement, at that time, Ray was probably 86, 87, 88 years old, still very sharp, but such a throwback. He would have these scripts for Washburn McCreevy, and he'd have these scripts for the vignettes, you know, and it would be like, the year was 1987, and Darrell Thompson ran 98 yards against Michigan, and he would rattle these vignettes off, and they'd all have to be in a certain time. The commercials were 30 seconds. He'd have this old-style dial stopwatch, not the digital, but I'm talking like the old style where you had to reset it. And, you know, nowadays, you and I, Mitch, know, and we'll let people in on a little secret, when we record a commercial or record a sportscast or what have you, and we're off by a second, all we have to do is digitally go in and take a breath out or compress it down to 30 seconds, and you don't know. Well, back in the day, you had to hit it. You had to hit 30, or you had to redo it from scratch, because there just wasn't editing stuff like there was. And even then, I tell Ray, I can edit this. You don't have to hit 30. But Ray would sit down and do 15 Washburn McCreevy spots, like a whole season's worth. He'd have the stopwatch, he'd have the scripts, and he'd go 15 for 15. I mean, I can't go one for one, and I'm young, and he's 87, 88. He'd start that stopwatch, and it was great. He'd get to the end of the thing, and he'd be for Washburn McCreevy Funeral Chapels, and he'd look down at the stopwatch click, and he'd know if he had to hurry or slow it down, and he'd hit the mark right at 30 every time. At that age, I mean, he just an incredible guy. Best of all, and I mean this in all sincerity, maybe the nicest guy I've ever met. So polite, so gracious. He was very welcoming. He'd comment on things he heard in my broadcast, and we just would have great conversations. I wish you could stay for hours and chat with him, but wonderful guy, certainly will be missed, and what a lifetime of memories for all Minnesotans and all Gopher fans.
And one of the most amazing things about Ray Christensen's career, 50 years with the same gig. I mean, a lot has to be going right for those chips to fall in place, and you have to be pretty dang good to last in this industry with the same gig for 50 years, right?
Well, no question about it. And you know, it was a situation, too, where he was so good, and people still tell me about it. You know, it's funny, and I have always tried to make sure to pay homage to Ray. People will tell me, oh, you're no Ray Christensen. I'm like, you're right. I mean, I wish I was, but, you know, there's only one Ray. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame, and, you know, at least twice or three times during a football broadcast, particularly when we're at home, the radio booth that we're in is named the Ray Christensen Radio Booth, and I will try to bring that up. We do not want to forget about Ray Christensen and the work he's done and what he's meant to Gopher fans and the memories over the years. So I've always been one with trying to get his name in as much as we can. And when he chose to say, hey, you know what, I think I'm going to bow out of these vignettes, because he did the vignettes. This is my 11th year. He did the vignettes maybe for the first 7 or 8 years. And then in recent years, his time, he just didn't want to devote the time to it, which is understandable. And then I think, you know, I mean, his health just started to fade a little bit, and it was a shame that we don't hear his voice on these broadcasts anymore. And now he's been silenced, but certainly the memories have not been silenced. And in addition to him being inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, you think about 50 years, last chance to call a win in Ohio Stadium against Ohio State. He had never, that was the only place in the Big Ten, basketball or football, he had never called a Gopher win. And sure enough, in 2000, it was his last chance, because he knew he'd be retiring in 01. The Gophers and Glenn Mason got a victory at Ohio Stadium. And to hear that call and to hear the joy in his voice, and you could hear the voice trembling, and he was a very stoic play-by-play guy. If you'd listen to his calls, very old school, just very great technique. But you could tell that win meant a lot, and it's fun to listen back to some of those highlights.
Mike Grimm, voice of the Gophers, sports director at Minnesota News Network, our guest today on the Blitz. No perfect way to segue from that to talking Gophers hoops, so we'll just kind of dive right in. Did you look at Saturday's game for Minnesota and Richard Pitino's squad as a must-win? And I'm not saying if they lost, they would have had no shot at the dance, but the losing streak they were on, it was sitting at 5. They had the players-only meeting earlier last week. It just felt like a must-have kind of game to me.
Well, I we talked, I believe, last week. I think this three-game stretch, really all important. Quite honestly, if they go 3-0, they have made their path quite simple and quite, I don't want to say easy, because nothing's easy. If they lose any of the three or two of the three, then it becomes a near impossible task to try to get to where you need to be, because the math becomes trickier. So it was a big, big, big win. First of all, people forget, even though Illinois struggled, and what are they now, 3-7 or 3-8 in the league, they were sitting at 58 in the RPI. So that is a road win, believe it or not, a top 100 RPI road win. So that actually, but besides the fact that they just needed it, from a resume standpoint, even though it's not going to look that impressive, from a formula standpoint, it's a meaningful victory. It's a road win that's a top 100 RPI win. So all of those things combined made it a big win. Now they have to follow that up. Hopefully they got that mojo back. Hopefully they got things going, and they'll feel good about themselves Wednesday, heading on into Saturday with a road game at Rutgers. Wednesday, of course, the Hawkeyes of Iowa come to town.
They had the players-only meeting that I mentioned before early last week, and those always feel like, regardless of sport, they always feel like somewhat of a kind of last gasp effort, because you don't hold them when things are going great and fine and dandy. And if you come out and lose the next game after you hold one of those, it's almost like, well, what now, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I think this three-game stretch, if they can get to 6-6, I'll be honest, if they play coin toss basketball the rest of the way, they'll be in the tournament, in my opinion. I think 9-9 gets them in. And quite honestly, as this bubble's starting to take shape, now a lot can happen and there can be bid stealers from different leagues, but as this bubble takes shape, 8-10 potentially could get them in as well. But 9-9, they're going to feel very, very good about their situation. So if they can get back to 6-6, they can coin toss it the rest of the way and make the tournament. Now, you'd like to be better than that. Why not 10-8? Why not 11-8? This team hasn't won double-digit Big Ten games, I think, since 2004. So that's a long time between swallows. So it's easy now. Talk is cheap. They're sitting at 4-6. But if they want to get to those kind of heights, these next two get them back to 6-6 if they can win. So they're going to be favored in both, and they're going to want to go out and get them both.
The Gophers started somewhat slow out of the gate Saturday in Champaign. Once they settled down, I thought they controlled the game, especially in the second half, Mike, with their defense, which has been a nice recipe in wins for them this season. But they started slow. Did you somewhat expect that, knowing that they had exactly 1 week between games?
Yeah, a little bit. They were down 6, but that was pretty much, I thought they grabbed control of the game with about 8 minutes into the first half. They were down 6, they went on an 8-0 run, or they were down 5, they went on an 8-0 run to take the lead by 3, and I don't think they trailed after that. I think it was tied at half, but they jumped up by 5 at one point, 35-30. And I thought they stayed pretty well in control of the game, and then Illinois went ice cold. And the Gophers stretched it out to 13 at one point, and then Minnesota gave up 6 straight and trimmed it to 7. And I was always nervous. It wasn't one of those games, like they occasionally have a game where, like the Ohio State game at home, I never really even got nervous even when Ohio State cut it to 3. It just felt like the Gophers were the better team and playing better. This game, I didn't get that sense, but I also didn't get the sense like, oh, this is, you know, going to be one of those, it seems like, where they're just going to let it slip away. It seemed like they were in control, but it wasn't in control enough to where you felt like, yeah, no need to be nervous. It was always a nervous situation, right up, quite honestly, until there was a minute left and they were up 10, and Illinois decided to not foul at that point.
Mike Grimm, our guest today. How about Reggie Lynch leading the way on offense? He had 15 points. I believe he was 6 of 10 from the field. Most importantly, he stayed out of foul trouble, which helped garner him more playing time on the court. And we know what he brings defensively in the paint as a presence for Richard Pitino and that team. But offensively, he was kind of clicking against Illinois on Saturday.
He did a great job, and had maybe, I talked to the University of Illinois Sports Information Director after the game, his block of the dunk attempt of Malcolm Hill in that first half, he told me that that might be the most impressive block he's ever seen in a Big Ten game, and you know what, I'm not going to put up a huge argument to say that it wasn't. I mean, that was an incredible block shot. And that's a game changer, because he goes in from thinking it's going to be a dunk to really having it stuff back down his throat. And then the Gophers go down. I believe they got a basket, 4-point swing. And, you know, from there, you know, Malcolm Hill really didn't have a great game. Gophers kept him in check. He was ice cold from three. But you factor all that in. Lynch still has some work to do. He still can be improving. There's no doubt about that. But there's no doubt that's probably the best Big Ten game he's played.
Do you ever get the feel that the Gophers are going to be in a tourney game this year, whether it's in the Big Ten tourney or the Big Dance, and a large part of their success will hinder on whether or not Reggie Lynch can stay out of foul trouble? I don't know if I'm stretching that out too much. I think this team goes as Nate Mason goes for the most part, but Reggie Lynch has proved to be a pretty integral part, and we saw it on offense Saturday. I don't know. I just get the sense that there's going to be a big game or a big moment, and if Reggie Lynch can stay out of foul trouble, it's going to pay large dividends for the Gophers.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He played, 33 minutes, I believe, Saturday, and that is a difference maker. And I think even to the point where it shows, you know, I wonder how Pitino, and I'll certainly ask him this week, looks at this. Like, when Reggie gets his second foul, he's immediately taken out because the concern is it'll pick up a third. I'm talking about in the first half. Well, the question is, with all the value there, is it better to roll the dice when he picks up two? So in other words, let's say he picks up his second foul with 15 minutes left to go in the first half. Well, now he's sat for 15 minutes if you stay the course of what you've been doing, and you know he's out. There's no, you know, there's no repercussion. Where if you roll the dice, now he might pick up his third and then sit, but maybe he plays another 9 minutes and doesn't commit a foul. And that's a key piece of winning and losing games, if you can get an extra 9 minutes out of him. And again, the issue then becomes, can he play discipline? He does go for the block shots a lot, and how do you handle all of that, and how smart can he play? But the fact is, you saw how valuable he is getting those minutes. There may be a time in a big game where Pitino's going to have to roll the dice and leave him in with two fouls, I think.
We'll finish up with a couple of points. Looking ahead, Iowa in the barn on Wednesday was thought to be somewhat of like a, not a rebuild, but like a reboot year for Iowa. A lot of youngsters coming in. Peter Jock, their leading scorer, is a senior. But Iowa has those freshmen, and they've been playing pretty great ball as of late.
Very good. Three straight wins. Quite honestly, a little surprised that they have played the way they have without Peter Jock. Now, he played yesterday. I've not watched the film on that game, nor have I even looked at the box score. So, for all I know, he scored 30. I don't know what he scored. But it's my understanding that they wanted him to play yesterday. They beat Nebraska. The Gophers, though, it will be interesting to see what kind of team they get from Iowa, because without Jock, I think some people were thinking, oh, man, this Iowa team, they have Ohio State. They have a road game at Rutgers, which, Rutgers isn't great, but that's not a picnic either. And without Jock, one of the, not just the conference's leading scorer, one of the country's leading scorers, this team's going to be in trouble. And they went out and played probably two of their best three or four games of the year. And, now what? And so now it's a three-game win streak, and that's who the Gophers will take on Wednesday night at the barn.
Keys moving forward for Minnesota this week against the Hawkeyes, and then Rutgers this weekend would be what, Mike Grimm?
Well, they have to, take advantage of now. And this league is something. I'll be interested to see how Maryland, and I don't want to get off subject, but I'm going to answer this in a way that is all-encompassing. Like, Maryland had won a bunch of close games, right? And now they lost and kind of let one slip away by Purdue. I'll be interested to see how they react, because in this league it's amazing. Even good teams can go on a two- or three-game losing streak. You lose confidence quickly, or you play on an edge for so long. When they, I mentioned to Tolickson the other day, when the toothpaste gets out of the tube, it's hard to get it back in. Well, now maybe the Gophers have reversed it. Maybe, they had five-game losing streak. They played pretty well, couldn't get it done. My key is, can this confidence that they gained hopefully by this win now give them the confidence to go on a run where they win four of the next five or five of the next seven? And if they do those things, end up in a place they want to be in the postseason. So to me, the key is, can they continue to play with confidence and close out games? And if the answer is yes, I think we'll all be happy with where they end up.
He is Mike Grimm, voice of the Gophers, sports director at Minnesota News Network. Catch both games this week against Iowa and Rutgers right here on KATE. Mike, as always, thank you for the time.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed it, Mitch. Thank you.
Weekend and Monday headlines and much more next right here on The Blitz.